For Pennsylvania hunters and conservationists, our roots run deep. The episodes we bring to you on the Pennsylvania Game Commission's podcast, Call of the Outdoors, will take a deep dive into exposing the incredible work being done by agency staff and partners, including statewide habitat projects, the science behind wildlife management, and what drives agency decisions. The Pennsylvania Game Commission's mission is twofold: to manage and protect wildlife and their habitats for not only current but future generations, and to promote hunting and trapping in the Keystone State. Hey, and welcome to Pennsylvania Game Commission's podcast, Call the Outdoors. It's a new look. Hey, we've been off the air for about 6 months or so, and coming back to you with a video component. Pretty excited about that, but we're in the best time of the year. And today we have two special guests, the boss man, our executive director, Mr. Brian Burhans, and Commissioner Bob Schwalem. And we're going to talk about a lot of things, but the most important thing we're going to do, we're going to get excited about hunting season. We're going to talk a lot about how the Pennsylvania Game Commission works, because it might be a refresher for some, but it's going to be a new lesson for a lot of us, including myself, because there's a lot of moving parts that happen here at the Game Commission, and we're going to just dive into it. So, Brian, I'm going to let you kick it off about the most exciting time of the year.
It's the most exciting time of the year. You know, we had our dove season and our early goose, and you know, a lot of our dove fields are looking good. Now, we had a really dry spring, as we all know, and that affects how well these greens are gonna go. But some of the fields I've looked at look great. So people out there having a good time. You know, that dove hunting is such an exciting opportunity. If you never experienced a managed dove field where you're actually managing the habitat for a quality dove hunting experience, boy, I tell you what, it's a lot of tough shooting and a lot of fun.
Well, dove season also makes a lot of people not tell the truth. Because you shoot a lot of bullets, or shot shells, I should say.
Yes.
But you said something earlier, and I'm just going to get a little bit of preliminary information. You say we had a dry spring, and yes, we did. There's a really good thing for that, and I think all three of us here at this table can agree that the turkeys, from what I'm hearing out there, now this is total anecdotal, not science. I'm hearing a lot of people seeing turkeys, a lot of little ones.
Well, we do know that weather is a main driver, is a huge driver when it comes to reproductive success. And wet, cold springs are not good for turkey reproduction. We've had a dry spring and summer. So, you know, all anecdotally as well, I'm seeing lots of pictures and looking forward to another good year of turkeys.
Just so y'all know that anecdotally, this is something that they tell me all the time, because I come to the office, I'm like, what? And they're like, that's not science. That's just your opinion. And that's what anecdotal means. And I use that quite a bit, because I have my opinion sometimes. And, you know, what I've learned here is that, you know, science is the key to managing wildlife, and really want to talk about that part of it, and the science part, and how we manage wildlife with the North American model of wildlife of conservation. Mm-hmm. North American model of conservation, and that's what our key is here in the state of Pennsylvania, and all state wildlife agencies for that matter.
And really go in a little bit maybe further about what the North American model. So when you think of the word model, think of example. So it's the North American example of wildlife management. And it's not a prescriptive model. In other words, it's not necessarily an example of what you do moving forward, but rather it allowed us to look back at how we've managed wildlife in North America. So Canada and the United States have similar ways in which we manage wildlife. We manage very cooperatively together, and the model or the North American example provides that example, but it's a way for us to articulate or talk about why we've been able to achieve what we had here in the United States and Canada, and some of the great success stories we've had. Now, part of it's timing. There's no doubt the timing when, you know, wildlife conservation really hit the United States, and then you know that's late 1800s, early 1900s is when, you know, wildlife was in a really, really bad shape. And as you're moving into the 1930s is really when the science of wildlife management started to evolve. So when you hear the term the North American model of wildlife conservation, think of it again as the North American example of wildlife conservation. And, you know, fundamental to this model, now there's seven pillars we talk about under the model that helps us describe how we got to where we are today. And one of them is probably the basics of it is what we call the public trust doctrine. So the public trust doctrine basically says that it is the citizens of the state that own the wildlife resource. This was actually a Supreme Court case in, I think it was 1842 or 43, and it was Martin versus Waddell. It had to do with oysters, and that's really where public trust doctrine was really established through the Supreme Court, that, you know, the wildlife resources, the natural resources of the state belong to the citizens of the state. So what it means is you can't privately own wildlife. So when we look at the public trust doctrine, it's very foundational to how every state wildlife agency or provincial wildlife agency manages wildlife in the United States.
Trail cameras have kind of hurt that a little bit. People think when they get a picture of a big buck that that's their buck.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at, you know, some of the other simple things that have allowed us to be successful in wildlife conservation, the obvious one is elimination of market hunting. So again, it belongs to all the people of Pennsylvania. Now, like Commissioner Schwalem, who is the policymaker for the agency, him and his colleagues, a total of 9 commissioners, make the policy or the rules, seasons and bags and everything else. The science is an important part of that decision-making process, but also is the desires of all the citizens of Pennsylvania, because everybody in the state of Pennsylvania has a say-so in how wildlife is managed.
Not just hunters.
Exactly.
And that's what, I mean, we're all hunters here and we buy a hunt license and, you know, mm-hmm. You know, I've been here 4 years, and I, you know, there's a little bit of misconception. We manage that wildlife for all 13 plus million people that reside in the Commonwealth.
Exactly. You know, in certain things, like we do a lot of surveys. So we talk about there's opinion, anecdotal information, and then there's scientific surveys. And what that does is it gives us an idea. We call it the population. Say, so because there are many times we do survey just hunters, because if it's a hunting issue, we want to ask what the hunters' opinions are. So when you look at those 850 to 900,000 hunters that buy licenses, we define that as a population, and we say, okay, we're going to pick a random sample that's going to be representative of our hunter population. And all that means is we're going to pick enough people to sample and ask our questions, and that sample of individuals is going to really reflect the entire population. So you're not going to go in there and say, well, we only want people 35 and younger. That's not it's not a representative sample of what the entire hunting population looks like. So we, you know, the science is not the complete factor that's looked at when making these decisions, but it's a very important part. And
sure.
It's also part of the model of wildlife conservation model, is that science is the tool that we use in making decisions for wildlife management.
Right. And when you look at surveys, it's, you know, it's kind of like, even we all on election night, we all get to watch, you know, what's going on in the polls and this and that, and they use those same kind of models to get those numbers. They don't actually have every single person that cast a vote, and so many people think that we have to do that to get those surveys correct. And when you say sample size, there is a very scientific method to get those sample sizes, to get what we get back in our survey.
And language. It's not hard to figure out. You can go online and Google, what's the sample size I need for this population size? And, you know, the math's been, it works out. It's amazing how few people you have to survey in order to get the answer that population wants.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about, and we're going to get to you, Bob, I promise you.
Oh, I'm enjoying this.
Let's talk a little bit about how our agency was formed and why it was formed, why there's a Pennsylvania Game Commission. I mean, there is a reason for this.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very important reason in, you know, what our roles are. You know, and I tell everybody, friends and family, that when, you know, I've worked in the hunting industry personally for almost 40 years. When I came here, got behind these walls, I'm like, oh my God, I didn't realize all this stuff happened here. Because we get our out front people or law enforcement and game wardens that are out there to, you know, to do their job, and they're talking to the public. That's where we're most visible, seeing is our officers out there. But there's a whole lot that goes on at this agency, and I'll just pass it back over to you.
Yeah, and you know, Pennsylvania, like the initiation of the Pennsylvania Game Commission, which is created by the legislature, you know, in 1895, you look at the 1700s and 1800s, there really weren't any game laws, if you will. There were no game wardens. There was no, really, it was kind of lawless. People were still market hunting, and it was a lot of the market hunting, whether it was driven by fashion for some of the feathers that were used, or for meat, for, you know, there was ducks and game that was harvested and sent and sold in New York City, Philadelphia, and that's the way people make a living. Look at the buffalo out west. So there was a depletion of our wildlife resources during those periods of time, from settlement up till the late 1800s, you started to get people really concerned about wildlife. They weren't seeing wildlife. And as you move into the early 1900s, this era of conservation started to really come about. You know, leaders like Teddy Roosevelt and other conservation leaders at that time that basically started to become very vocal and unified in how we needed to conserve wildlife in this country. And lo and behold, in 1895, the Pennsylvania Game Commission was initiated. Many other agencies came in about that time, some a little later. The need was recognized by the citizens of the states that we need somebody watching out for wildlife. You know, granted, this was driven by a lot of hunters that recognized that without, you know, seasons in bags or something being done, that they wouldn't be able to pursue what they enjoy, which was hunting.
And when you look at that, I hear this a lot too, that hunters, you know, are greatest conservationists, and they really are. I mean, when you really look down deep, wildlife is here today. And I'm going back to turkeys because, to me, it's one of the greatest stories of all time. I mean, we turned the century, and they were off the landscape. And in year 2000, you could hunt them in 49 states. They had a huntable population. I mean, that's, you know, pat yourselves on the back as conservationists. That's remarkable.
Well, you look at white-tailed deer here in Pennsylvania. There was a period of time when they're just... the habitat was gone. It was removed. It was timbered. Again, market hunting. Look at the elk. The elk had to have been brought from out of state back into Pennsylvania to get that population back here in Pennsylvania. You know, we lost our larger predator species, mountain lions and wolves, and there's just not a fit for them in today's day and age for those kind of species. So some of them are permanently gone. But
We have almost 900,000 hunters. Mean, really, when you look at it.
So it's amazing when we look at, as well as we look at, you know, one of the model's tenets or pillars is, you know, wildlife is looked at as an international resource. So you had things such as the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, the Lacey Act, you know, other things that recognize cross-state boundaries and across-country boundaries in managing these wildlife species. You look at waterfowl, for example. A lot of those waterfowl we enjoy hunting here in Pennsylvania are actually born up in Canada.
Sure.
So the management actions that happen in Canada directly impact our hunting opportunities here in Pennsylvania.
Absolutely. And, you know, before we're going to jump over to Bob here in a second, let's explain how the agency works with the board.
Yeah.
And, you know, in total transparency, how your job is.
Right.
Because a lot of folks don't understand that. You know, we are a business, obviously, and we run it like a business, but it works. It has its intricacies that the public really needs to understand.
Yeah, our structure, we're referred to as an independent agency. So we receive no state tax dollars from the state of Pennsylvania. We're basically self-funded, if you will. But our model is similar to that of a nonprofit. We have a board of directors, and here we have a board of commissioners. The board of commissioners, they two big responsibilities they have. One is they hire an executive director. I'm their only employee. My job is to manage the agency. The board of commissioners is to oversee me and to set the seasons and bags and regulations for the Pennsylvania Game Commission. And they set seasons and bags and regulations as they're allowed by the legislature. So the legislature puts sideboards on it, says you're allowed to decide this to this, and that's where the commissioners operate in making those policy decisions. My job, and working with our staff, we are the implementers of that policy. So our job as staff is to implement the policy as approved by the 9-member board of commissioners.
Right, and you know, they vote on all those at our quarterly meetings.
Yeah, public meetings.
Yep. And I always encourage everybody, if you want, you know, to be heard or you want your input in, you know, obviously we'll talk about this probably more, is GM comments and also participation in those public meetings. I mean, we invite everybody to come out. They're open to the public.
Oh, yeah. And we have a number of different ways for the public to get involved and give us their input. We want their input. The commissioners receive any communications, whether it's a written letter or they come in through our website. They go on and say, contact us, and they fill out their information and send us a message that's automatically delivered to the commissioners. We have public input at the commissioner meetings. So there's a number of ways that people can get involved and engaged and voice their opinion on how they think wildlife should be managed
Sure.
in the state.
Coming to you now.
All right.
So you're one of the newest commissioners to the board, and what, about a year now?
It's a year.
That's... You made it that long.
I made it that long.
So look, when you look at year one, do you have any highlights that you know, or just, I'm sure it was a learning experience, but just how did year one go for you?
Well, first of all, let me just say this. It truly is a privilege and an honor for me to serve. And, you know, I, you never really know what to expect. I mean, I know I've hunted in many different states, and I've heard so many neat things about the Pennsylvania Game Commission from other agencies. Like, the Pennsylvania Game Commission is always, like, revered. People would say, oh, you're from Pennsylvania. Oh, you guys have a great agency. And so when I was finally chosen to be a part of this, I can't tell you how excited and honored that I am to be able to do this. You know, you said it earlier here in the conversation. When you came on board, you didn't realize how much the Game Commission's actually involved. And that was a surprise, a pleasant surprise for me, as I tried to get exposed to as many different programs that we have offered. You know, going to the NAS program, seeing 900 kids from around the state, and they got their camo on, and they're hunters, and they're learning about archery, and they're competing. The Game Commission sponsors that. The mentored hunts that we do down at Hines, and the hunts that we talked about in this meeting today that we're going to be doing. There's so many neat things that I'm really excited to be a part of. The learning part, oh my gosh, there's a ton to learn. But you know what's neat about this is I'm on a team with a bunch of professionals that are down to earth that have really taken the time out to help me. I have a lot of questions. And anytime I ever have a question, the folks here at the agency always take their time to help me through. So, you know, maybe in 8 years I'll have it all figured out.
Well, the thing is it's like anything. We all have ideas and opinions and concerns, but, you know, when we get down the road with anything, we all got to meet in the middle and do what's best for wildlife.
Right.
I mean, that's us, and that's the people out there. Mm-hmm. You know, that has to be what we think about. We have to think about not only our kids, but our grandkids and the future generations.
Absolutely.
Because we all want to leave this better than we found it. I mean, that's, you've been in this industry your whole career.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's all I know.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a reason. It's the passion for what you do every day, because we know what we do today helps anything that's out there. But what were your expectations coming into? I mean, first let's talk about how you became a commissioner.
Wow, that's a I tell everybody it's a roller coaster, an emotional roller coaster. It was a 2-year period, and plenty of interviews and different reports, and then you're doing good, you're gonna do good, maybe, I don't know, you know. But anyway, no matter what the outcome, I felt is if I would be fortunate enough to be chosen to serve, it would be, you know, again, like I said earlier, it would be my privilege to be a part of this. And you know, I do all what I do is because of the future and our children and our grandchildren, and to make sure that this is passed on and that they have the opportunity to enjoy what I've enjoyed. I always consider myself so fortunate to be born in Pennsylvania, because we have so much, mm-hmm. so many different critters to hunt, so much beautiful landscape, you know. And I always tell that to the kids in hunter ed class, that it's really important that you guys realize you are in Pennsylvania, buddy.
Right.
So my expectations, you know, I really didn't know what to expect.
Right.
My whole thing was I wanted to be able to be fully prepared and give it 110% all the time. And like I said, I think that with all of the quality people that I'm around, and they help me all the time, I think, you know, we're going to get there eventually.
Isn't that the motto of everybody from the Skook?
The Skook.
And what a lot of people don't understand, commissioners are not paid. They come here and they do this. They volunteer their time, and they put a ton of time to being a commissioner. You know, our job as staff is to give them information. They make the decision. In fact, it's not even appropriate for staff to lobby a commissioner on a regulation. Our job is to give them the information and the data and answer their questions.
Right.
And then at the same time, the commissioners are out there listening to the public, and you know, they have 9 districts. And there's a reason for that. They get representatives from throughout the state. Although commissioners don't vote on behalf of their district, they're actually voting on behalf of the citizens of Pennsylvania for the entire state, which even makes it more complicated.
Right.
So it's not an easy job, especially when you look at wildlife management. Everybody wants something different from the resource. And how are you always going to come up with rules and seasons and bags or rules or regulations that's going to fit everybody? You're not. It just doesn't happen.
Right. Like, you're looking for big bucks, right?
Well, let's look at whitetail deer, for example. You know, within whitetail deer, I got farmers oftentimes want less deer. I've got forest landowners who are trying to grow trees because their livelihood's tied to forestry. They want a managed deer herd that may not be as high as some people would like. I've got deer hunters, and we typically want more deer. But they even live within the deer hunting ranks. I've got rifle deer hunters. I've got archery hunters. My archer hunters want something a little different than the rifle deer hunters. Then I've got muzzleloader hunters. Then I got flintlock hunters towards the end of the season that want something different than some of the inline muzzleloader hunters want. You know, there's so many people that want something from the same resource, and trying to manage that really puts the commissioners in a very difficult decision. That's why they use the science. The wildlife science is very much a big part of how they use that information to make decisions, but also the social sciences. So that's why we do a lot of surveys to understand what the hunting public and the general public feel about the things that we do, the regulations that we create. So that's how we listen to those people. And the commissioners have to put all of that together and then do the best job they can. And still at the same time, we all have biases. We all have people that in our circles that talk to us to try to push that out and really make the best decision they can. It's not an easy job.
And on top of that, going back to deer for a second, we're in a semi-crisis situation where you look at disease.
Yeah.
You know, on top of all those other elements, and you know, we have a job to do, and that's the future of our you know, of our animals, of the white-tailed deer. And you know, when you look at that, it isn't as easy as just going, hey, I want to see 20 deer when I go out instead of three. You know, we all have to be better hunters at that point. If we're only seeing two or three deer, we're not where they live. It is what it is. We're in a great time when you look at wildlife conservation and a time to be a hunter.
Oh yeah.
I mean, think about where we're at today.
Absolutely. Where I agree 100%.
So let's talk about the public and when they want to get involved and you know, whether they see you and Bob, I know you do events all over the state, and especially in your district, though. But, you know, you're always out there mentoring at shows, and you're always willing to lend a hand, and you're always willing to lend an ear. And I think that's what really our commissioners are out there. They want to hear from the public. If I'm right on that one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And there's many ways to do that. If you want to talk about that for a second.
What I try to do is keep myself open. I make as many club meetings as possible because I'm a hunter, I'm a conservationist, and I'm volunteering, I'm serving on the Pennsylvania Game Commission. I want everybody to know, not just the hunters, but everybody in Pennsylvania, that we do care, and we do care, mm-hmm. and we want to hear what you have to say. And I always share the statement that, you know, I want to hear what you have to say because I'm going to take it back to Harrisburg. And the neat thing about being on this board is I feel not only do we have a great staff, but we got some really great commissioners, and they've been very helpful, especially to a novice rookie like myself. And, you know, seeing all the passion that they have and how they, you know, take upon themselves to be available. And I try to emulate that. I try to get out there as much as I can, especially at like youth events. Anytime that there's a mentored hunt or a youth field day, I want to be out there. I want to see what the kids are up to. I want to talk to the parents. I want to hear their feedback. And what's pretty cool is there's a lot of good feedback, and they appreciate what the agency does. So it's really good stuff, you know. So there's a lot of people that really do care about wildlife conservation and the Pennsylvania Game Commission, and I'm very pleased to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if they can't catch a commissioner at an event or whatever, that we also have our GM comments, mm-hmm. where you can write in, and they go out every day or every other day, or I know you read them all the time. I mean, pretty much everyone that comes through there and, you know, disseminates through the board, especially when it affects their district. And, you know, on our website, pgc.pa.gov, and you can find the GM comments and a way to get those notes, on the dashboard to the commissioners. And I encourage everybody, you know, if you have opinions, or it'd also be nice to hear if there's good things that are happening out there, things you like too. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you get bombarded with negativity, and you know, we're human. We're doing the best we can at all times, but also the good things that we do out there. It's good to hear about those too. Yeah, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
So Brian, when you look at it, let's just talk about some of the realities we kind of did with whitetails, and I tried to convince the guys to put a turkey up there, guys, but they weren't having it.
I've been noticing that.
Yeah, we'll
talk about that later.
As we get closer to May, we'll definitely have some turkeys on set. But some of the realities that we face as an agency.
Yeah, you know, the realities are, you know, especially when we look at, when I go back to what everybody has different needs for the wildlife resource, you know, and sometimes I'll hear the comment, well, why is the Game Commission so controversial? We're not controversial. The fact of the matter is we have different user groups that want different things from the same resource. So the commissioners have to make those tough decisions, those tough calls, based on the best available information that we have at that time to make those decisions. And then looking not only of what needs to be done right now, but with the consideration of how is that going to impact the future of, say, our hunting heritage and our wildlife populations, and, you know, this whole concept of resource first, and making sure that we want to keep these. You know, it wasn't that long ago, what, 1990, we estimated that bobwhite quail blinked out in Pennsylvania. We don't want that to happen.
Right.
You know, that blinked out for a reason, and it had to do with change in agricultural practices and a few other reasons. But, you know, we don't want those things to happen. And we have species called species of greatest conservation need, where we put a lot of effort because we want to keep common species common. We don't want them to be listed. When you're listed, a whole kinds of other problems opens Pandora's box of issues. So, you know, there's so many challenges to the agency, you know, just getting more people to know who we are and what we do, that we don't sell lottery tickets. You know, we do have an old kind of archaic name, the Pennsylvania Game Commission. A lot of people in Pennsylvania don't know what game is. They think of Monopoly. They think of or going to get a lotto ticket. So, you know, but that's the challenges every state wildlife agency across the country. We all have similar struggles all across the country. And, you know, especially when it comes down to your most popular managed species or hunted species like white-tailed deer and wild turkey, you know, and that's usually where the passion comes out.
Sure. And we love that passion.
Absolutely.
I mean, no matter what, no matter if someone's coming in with disagreeing opinions, we still want to hear from you.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, but the bottom line is we all have to work together. And, you know, somebody has to set those rules and regs for the benefit of the species. And that, I mean, really, that's what our job is we're trying to make sure they're here for many years to come. And, you know, when you look at our mission and our mission statement, and, you know, that says it all. We're the state's wildlife agency. And a lot of folks don't understand that it's not just whitetails and turkeys and bears and grouse and rabbits. It's every other 480
species.
Yeah. That we're responsible to maintain those populations as we go forward. And you know, when you look at how we're moving into the future, you know, forward with our mission, can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Some,
the future isn't like 2 months from now when bucks are chasing does.
Right.
The future is a lot farther
10, 15
than that.
Years
right.
ago. I mean, one is continuing to recruit individuals into hunting. Why? Is it to sell more licenses? No, it's we don't want this heritage of hunting to ever die. Pennsylvania has a hunting heritage unlike any other state. There's a few have pretty strong hunting heritage, but Pennsylvania is the top of the heap when it comes to that ingrained hunting. It's accepted amongst our general population of citizens here in Pennsylvania, and it's part of, you know, what other state, you know, would close down a day of school just so kids could go hunting. That's unheard of. So Pennsylvania is very much a big, big hunting state. But looking into the future, you know, we have a change in dynamics you know, with younger people that are now being and have been for some time, their time being taken up by organized sports and after school activities. And there are other things that are challenging getting other people into introducing them into hunting and trapping. And we got to keep focused on that, because if we lose hunting as a tool for wildlife management, we got problems.
Right.
You know, look at CWD and white-tailed deer. Our hunters are our first line towards helping us manage that disease. And without those hunters, it would be devastating to the wildlife resource and to all citizens of Pennsylvania.
You know, and it's, I'm just going to tie into that point, because it's one of our big initiatives this fall, is we're asking our hunters, you know, they come in here, and we had our new antlerless program this year where you could get it with your hunting license, and just got through round four, you know, not too long ago. And, you know, everybody has that deer tag in their pocket. We need you to use it.
Yeah.
And CWD is a big reason. I mean, there's a lot of areas in this state where our population is through the roof, to be honest with you. And the only way we can manage those whitetail populations for the better for the future is we all need to take it upon ourselves to shoot an antlerless deer, because if you look at the percentage of people that get a tag and don't shoot a deer, it's mind-blowing.
Oh,
what happens?
Yeah, you know, that was 98% of the hunters, if I remember correctly, shoot zero or one deer.
Right, it's crazy. I mean, and it's hard to fathom that, as you know. But, you know, you talk to your buddies and this and that, but we sell a lot of hunting licenses to people that might go one day a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need you to get out there. We need you for the future. And, you know, the CWD and just trying to mitigate that spread of that disease, it's pretty important that in our habitat, you know, the folks out there that on the ground trying to, you know, make the best habitat out there, it's tough to do when your deer population's high. It really is.
And we're fortunate now, you know, you look at our whitetail population here in Pennsylvania. It's amazing. I mean, it's amazing. We've got some beautiful bucks running around.
Yes.
And they're big and they're healthy. And I'm getting ready for some archery hunting, let me tell
you. Oh, my word. You're kidding me.
Oh, I'm ready.
That's great news. And Bob, I just wanted to ask you this. I should have asked this up front. I mean, and I try to do this with a lot of people. So I got a couple questions. How did you get started hunting?
You know, I was like, I think right out of the hospital for some reason.
You came out of the womb?
I mean, even before I was old enough to go hunting, I would bag school because my father would, I was 10 years old. I would bag school and hide behind the couch because my father would go hunting and I wanted to be there. And I figured if he got a deer, I wouldn't get in any trouble. So I've been addicted to hunting since I can remember.
Yeah, we came from the same lines.
Yeah, and you know the thing about it is, as I get older, nothing has changed.
Right.
I'm still stoked about it. You know, sitting here listening to you guys talk about all this neat stuff, I'm like, I got goosebumps.
So do you still have a problem sleeping before
yes.
an opening day?
Oh, yeah. Big time, yeah.
It's funny how, like, when I used to travel the country a lot, I'd do a seminar and I'd ask that question. And only in Pennsylvania, 50% of the people raise their hand because it's that they're just so excited about that. So I ask this question a lot too, and there's no right answer to this. If you could define conservation for in your term, in your mind, what does conservation mean?
Well,
I put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I mean, I always believed that hunting and conservation were synonymous to each other. So when you say conservation, I mean, I'm doing my part for conservation as a hunter, you know, and I'm not just out there. It's not about going out and killing something. It's about harvesting something and doing good things while I'm in the woods. You know, I hate to see it, but when I'm out there and I find trash or anything like that, I usually come back with a backpack fuller than when I go into the woods. Conservation, hunting and conservation, they're right here.
I got you.
Very near and dear to my heart.
That's awesome. And we've asked many, many people that. But, gentlemen, we're about out of time for the first episode. We're pretty excited. Learned a lot today.
Glad we're back.
Any last words from you to our folks out there that are listening?
Yeah, best of luck this hunting season.
Yeah. Be safe.
Be safe.
Have fun and take somebody new.
That's exactly right.
Very good.
So, you know, on our thing, it says wrap it up. I can't wrap it up any better than that, except for thank you for being a Pennsylvania hunter. And stay tuned as we're going to come back with Call of the Outdoors. It's going to be a monthly series. It'll be the first Wednesday of every month, and we hope to see you back here again. Thank you for being a Pennsylvania hunter. Thank you for being a conservationist. We appreciate you following along.